Good morning, everyone. Welcome to day two of TechEd and to this session, OSP 233, Managing the SharePoint Disruption with End-to-End SharePoint Governance. My name is Dan Holm, and I am an MVP in SharePoint Server. I've been an MVP for about 5 years in that space and an additional year in directory services. And I work for AvPoint, which is the software vendor with the largest presence in the SharePoint space. AvPoint offers a really amazing set of products that help you manage, operate, and optimize SharePoint. My job with AvPoint, though, is to help customers solve their SharePoint problems. I spend my life traveling the world, meeting with customers, discussing SharePoint with them, and helping them solve their problems. And that's just one of the ways that AvPoint invests in its customers to help them solve their problems. But what it means for me is that I'm able to come to you today and share with you the knowledge I've gained working with literally hundreds of organizations in every corner of the world. And I hope that I'm able to bring some very practical, actionable guidance to you to help you succeed with SharePoint governance. A little bit more about me. When I am not traveling the world with AvPoint, I actually live in Hawaii, which I know is a long way away for you here in the Netherlands and in Europe, but I hope sometime we can get you to visit, and so I thought I'd show you a couple of quick slides of what it looks like on the few days a month when I'm actually home, the view from my deck and the beach that's down the street. So I hope to have you come visit in Hawaii sometime. If you do come visit, give me a call, then it becomes a business trip, right? And at least in the United States, that means we can deduct it. I've been a consultant for 17 years, working with mostly Fortune caliber organizations, and next week I'm actually returning to one of my consulting jobs, which is working with NBC, the large American television network, during the broadcast of the Olympic Games. So I report on July 4th to London, and will be spending the next 6 weeks there, and I have actually been spending much of the last 2 months helping build the Microsoft infrastructure for Windows, Windows Client Server, Active Directory, and SharePoint. And last but not least, I'm an author. I've written a number of books and articles, including the training kit for SharePoint 2010 from Microsoft Press. And later on today, I will be signing copies of that book at the O'Reilly booth and at the AvPoint booth. So if you're interested and you get there quickly, we have a couple of free copies for folks. And for those of you who are from the Netherlands or from the region, the two most important points about me probably are that when I was young, I worked at De Efteling and the Floriade. So I've spent quite a bit of time here in the Netherlands and really enjoy coming back and getting to spend today with you. For everyone in the room, the most important information on the slide is my contact information. I'm accessible on Twitter and Facebook. I'm also on LinkedIn. And this link is the URL to all of my presentations. And later on today, I will upload all of these slides so you can get them from my site as well as, of course, from the TechNet site where they're currently available as well. So with all that in place, let's dive into our topic today, governance. Has anyone in here heard this word before? Of course, we're all here packed into this room because it is the hot topic of the day. It's creating a lot of buzz, and it is something that everyone is talking about. There's a lot of noise in the community, and if you were to listen to all of the discussion about governance, you would think that if you don't have governance, you will have nothing but pain, and if you have pain, it must be solved by governance. It has become almost as if it is the holy grail of SharePoint. And today, I hope to cut through that noise and prove to you that governance is not a new religion. It's not even particularly new. It's something that it should be have existed in our IT organizations for a long time. Unfortunately, SharePoint is putting us in a place where now we really feel the pain if we don't have governance. But creating good governance doesn't have to be difficult. It's complex, but not necessarily difficult. And so today we'll break that down. But let's start by getting on the same page and making sure we understand what governance is, at least what people say governance is. The word governance goes way back in history to ancient Greece, and the root of the word is related to sailing a ship, to navigating a ship. And one of the key points is that governance is not a destination, it is about how you get to that destination. It is about the process. And that is an important point to remember because in today's SharePoint world, a lot of people believe that governance is a document or it is a set of tools that you just magically make everything work. It's not. It's about steering a ship towards a destination that you never reach because your business goals keep changing. So that's where the root of the word comes from. If you go onto the interweb, the source of all things true, something like Wikipedia, for example, you might find a definition of service governance that looks like this. Governance defines the people, processes, and technologies that deliver a service. Now, as you'll see, and as many of you know, all of those pieces of the definition are true. The question is how people interpret that definition. And if we take that definition apart, I think one of the most challenging aspects of governance is that word deliver. That word can really mean two things, and it means that sometimes people come at a discussion of governance from two different angles. One thing deliver can mean is how it actually is managed, how the service that's in place works. In order to get a new team site, you must do this, and that site will last for this long before it is archived or deleted. That's really the operational side of your SharePoint service that governance has to inform. But the word deliver can also mean future tense. It means how do you add something into the service? That's the change management. And that is the other aspect of governance, of a SharePoint service that governance must define. And in all reality, this never ends because the new things that you add into your service have to then be managed while new things are added in. And so there is a cycle that lasts forever and ever. And as you talk about governance in your organizations, you should be aware of the perspective that different people come into that discussion with. Some people are thinking about operations, some are thinking about change, some are thinking about evolution and continuous improvement. All three of those things are correct. Now, I will start with a definition like this. Governance defines how business needs are delivered and managed. And notice there's a little asterisk, a star. We will enhance this definition as we go. But my concept of governance is something like this. You have a business, and the business needs matter. It really doesn't matter that we have SharePoint. SharePoint is just a way of achieving business needs. But SharePoint does provide a lot of value. So we throw into a business something like SharePoint as a service. And SharePoint can provide value in a lot of different ways. But as all of us know by now, you can't just deploy SharePoint over the weekend and have everything working on Monday morning. It's way too complex a platform, and we have to deploy it in moderate steps. So one of the first things governance needs to define for the business is what value it can expect from SharePoint today, and what value it can expect tomorrow, and what value it may never get from SharePoint. Governance needs to define to the business what the functionality is that SharePoint will deliver. And also service levels, things like uptime, performance, disaster recovery. And so governance acts as an interface between the service and the business, helping the business understand the service. It also helps the service get what it needs from the business. There needs to be inputs. For example, the service needs funding. It needs money. It needs resources. And even on a technical level, for example, creating a team site, the service needs to know what kind of information is going to be in that team site, how long the information needs to last, does it need to be protected in certain ways. Those are just a couple of examples of inputs that the service needs. And so there's really a two-way relationship between the business and the service that governance facilitates. And in the end, the goal is to be able to take business needs and translate them into a deliverable service, something that actually delivers those needs. Now, I will add one more piece to this picture, which is the management layer, or you can call it the operations layer. The operations layer is really about how we deploy, configure, troubleshoot, administer the service itself. And so the operations or management layer is really technically focused. It's more than business focused. And governance is slightly more business focused than technically focused. But all of these layers need to be aware of each other. The business needs to understand the service on the inside and vice versa. Business needs to go through governance and operations. They need to be talking with each other. So there need to be interfaces to allow a thorough discussion of how we take business needs and deliver them. So at a high level, that's what governance is. Why do we need governance? Well, many of you already know the answer to this. And I'd like to throw up a couple of statements that I hear from customers and see if some of these sound familiar to you. We can't get anything delivered because they keep adding requirements. How many of you have been in that boat in your SharePoint organizations? Yeah, quite a few. Nobody can make a decision. Sound familiar? We can't keep up with business demand. They keep asking us for things that we can't respond to fast enough. We don't know what's out there. We have no clue how many team sites we have, what kind of information is out there, whether it's critical, confidential, etc. User adoption isn't what we want it to be because, well, they don't understand, the magical they. Our developers don't understand how to develop correctly, how to deploy solutions into our environment. IT doesn't understand. IT doesn't understand how to gather the resources it needs and sell the business on SharePoint. My boss doesn't understand. And often if my boss doesn't understand, we can't get enough funding. That's a big one these days. We can't get the resources and the commitments we need from our organization. It's become chaos in many organizations. Our infrastructure can't keep up and support new workloads. We built an infrastructure for certain sets of projects, and now we're being asked to do new things that simply aren't possible on that infrastructure. Maybe the new demands require higher levels of uptime because they are business critical needs than what we originally built that infrastructure to support with team sites. SharePoint shines a spotlight on everything that's wrong with us. A good example of this that I hear at least once a week is an organization that comes to me and says, "We turned on search, and one day later we had to turn it off because people were seeing things they shouldn't see." Yeah? Now that's of course not SharePoint's problem. It's because they were indexing file shares, and the file shares had really bad permissions. SharePoint does respect permissions, but many of us in our file systems had bad permissions that simply users never found the information because it was so hard to drill down many layers of folders. So these kinds of things are all symptoms of pain, and I think many of us can relate to one or more of those statements. And so governance needs to serve many purposes to address this pain. It needs to set expectations about what SharePoint is going to deliver today, a roadmap of what it will deliver tomorrow, and service levels along the way. It needs to manage innovation. It needs to help the business take a business need and translate it into a solution. It needs to manage change. In other words, how do we actually change the environment, both from a technical perspective and a user adoption perspective? It needs to define policies that then specify how the service is managed. So governance might say something like, any document with privacy-related information cannot be exported outside of Germany, as an example. Governance defines those policies. The service then needs to manage to those policies. And governance needs to identify risks and rewards and costs and benefits. And there's actually an important difference between cost and benefit and risk and reward, and we'll see that as we continue. And it needs to assign roles and responsibilities, define who does what, and very importantly, it must define a way to verify performance. So this is just a list of what governance does. Again, this is a high-level introduction here. Many of you will know that governance should be doing those things. If you break those things down, I think they fall into four broad categories. The purposes of governance are to ensure that a business can manage innovation, adoption, administration, and insight. Those things will ensure that new needs can go into the system, can be deployed, adopted, supported, administered, operated, and then monitored to ensure that we're actually achieving those results. So that's another pivot on governance. Governance can be divided into change and operations. Governance can be divided into insight, innovation, administration, and adoption. And as we go through the rest of this session, I'm going to lay out a series of components of governance, seven components, that create a cycle that you can go through. And within those components, there will be critical steps and processes that we will discuss. Now, this slide is designed to look complex because all of these things are important to governance. But it doesn't have to be difficult. Complexity does not necessarily equate to difficulty. As long as you know what things you should be knowing, you can figure them out as you go. The real pain comes when you've gone down the road and you realize, I didn't know what I didn't know. And it's difficult to go capture that information retroactively. And we will also talk about how to solve that very real problem. So by the end of the session, you will understand what this slide means, and you will understand the components and the key processes that are necessary along the way. So now we can dive into the real core of this session. How do we actually establish governance? And as we go through this, I'm going to lay out the critical elements in four forces In other words, there's four engines to governance: strategic management, project management, change management, and operations management. And within those four engines, there are 12 key steps that need to be addressed by governance. And the reason I break it down this way is because each of these steps often can be owned by one part of the organization in a larger organization. In a smaller organization, someone might be doing the whole thing, but in bigger organizations, these tend to distribute quite nicely, as you'll see. So starting with the strategic element, how do we get SharePoint going? Now, many of you will already have tackled this piece, but for those of you who are newer or trying to expand your SharePoint operations, this piece is particularly important. The first step within the strategic engine is that you have to admit that you have a problem with SharePoint governance, or that you will. When I started talking about governance 6 years ago, it was difficult to convince organizations why they needed governance. Today, it's quite the opposite story. We have a full room of people because people understand the pain or the potential pain. And we already talked about some of the statements that customers put out there when they're feeling pain. So you have to realize that if you're not feeling the pain yet, you will. But it's because governance is critical, but it always has been. Many of the things we're going to talk about today should have been in place when we set up our file shares, because that was a service supporting information that the business needed. But we didn't. We just sort of turned on a share and let users go to work. Governance has always been critical, but SharePoint forces us to actually do it correctly. And the reason is SharePoint isn't like other services. Things like Exchange, or the Office Suite, or the Windows Client are services that you can pretty much just put out there. They don't require a lot of governance necessarily. But then you get to something like SharePoint, where SharePoint by itself doesn't do much. It's what the business does on SharePoint that is extremely valuable. And it's going to keep changing and changing and changing and changing. And so as a business solutions platform, suddenly we really need to understand what the business is doing on that platform in order to ensure that it is successful. So SharePoint isn't like other services, forcing us to really look at governance. So the business has to understand that governance is important. Second, the business has to understand why SharePoint is a strategic platform. So when you look at a business strategy, you look at the vision. You look at where the business is trying to go. It's trying to maximize value in one way or another. And businesses have different strategies. One business might, for example, be trying to grow geographically. So they're trying to open offices in different corners of the world. Another business may be trying to improve productivity, meaning reduce costs and make people redundant and make other people do more. Another business might be trying to respond to the market more quickly by understanding its customers better. All three of those are valid strategies, but they lead to very different tactics in how you address those strategies. And it's important to understand the business strategy because governance with SharePoint cannot be in a vacuum. Governance with SharePoint is not possible without knowing where the business is going, because governance is about steering a ship. And the SharePoint ship needs to be steering in the same direction as the business. So at the very highest level, there's business governance. How is the entire business going in a specific direction? Within that, each function has governance. Finance has governance. Sales has governance. IT has governance. And at the IT layer, this is where a business need is presented, and IT says, yes, we can find a technical solution to address this business need. And then within the suite of services that IT offers, each service has to have governance. So at this point, this is where we get down to the SharePoint service layer, governance layer that we're talking about today. So SharePoint governance lives within a much broader context, and you must know where the business is going in order to align SharePoint with that business strategy. Now, the alignment is critical in certain phases of an enterprise SharePoint service, certainly at the beginning, but also at critical steps in the middle where the business has to recommit to the importance of SharePoint. The bad news is SharePoint is not necessarily the easiest or cheapest platform for a single solution. If all you're trying to do is share documents, there are cheaper, easier ways to do it. We've been using file shares for 15 years pretty successfully to do that. But the issue is that that's not all we're trying to do. We're trying to meet other requirements. So we start fleshing out those requirements, and we start seeing some of the value of SharePoint. But it's still not necessarily the cheapest or easiest for a single point solution. But what SharePoint does give you is the ability to achieve this solution and the next solution and the next solution and the next solution. As a strategic platform for business value, SharePoint is pretty much a no-brainer discussion. And so you have to look at the strategy of your organization and chart out the projects to show how SharePoint will support various strategic initiatives of the organization. And this is what I call many projects to one platform mapping. So we are trying to sell SharePoint to the business. We look at what the business is trying to do today. And let's say that we know today there's a burning need for improvement in our contracts and procurement. This is a real example, by the way. This is a real customer. So they have a business process automation requirement for, in this case, contract management. They know that they are losing money because they cannot respond to RFPs fast enough, or they cannot secure contracts fast enough. So they know that they need that one solution. Now, SharePoint, again, may not be the cheapest, easiest platform for that one solution, but if we just simply look at what's coming down the road, we see a major push towards compliance. And this is a driver for a lot of organizations, compliance with internal or even governmental regulations about how information is managed. And compliance really requires some key elements, which include records management and findability. You have to be able to manage content and make it findable in order to support the many elements of compliance. And so SharePoint can give us those things. And we see that SharePoint now can provide two components of strategic value to our organization. We look further down the road, and we know our organization is growing. Communications department wants to improve how we communicate as internally in our organization. Our current intranet is way outdated, and we need to improve that. Well, SharePoint has a very good story about intranet publishing. And then we're growing globally, and we know we're going to need things that connect people, some of the social aspects of SharePoint, to help us find each other and understand what each other are doing in our organization. And as we get more global, we become more mobile. That's another huge business trend. And so we're looking at how do we provide files, let's just keep it at that, to platforms other than Windows desktops and laptops. Well, SharePoint has ways of exposing itself to multiple platforms. And you look at devices like iPads. There's ways we can easily integrate SharePoint with iPads and other portable devices. So when we look at all of the core drivers of a sample business, we can see the roles that SharePoint can play. And this is the kind of strategic mapping that needs to happen for your organization to commit to SharePoint. One of the worst things that can happen to a SharePoint project is if that very first project has to bear the entire cost of getting up and running with SharePoint, because that will most likely mean SharePoint will not be done correctly, if at all. The business has to understand the cost considerations here and the benefits of doing it right, of putting a platform in place today that might be slightly more expensive, not a lot more, just slightly, but the return on that is significant savings and synergies as the business moves forward with its initiatives. So as far as aligning SharePoint with the business strategy, your business has to understand that SharePoint is a strategic platform, and that SharePoint will be able to deliver the first solution and the solutions after that. And it has to have a clear picture of the return on investment of SharePoint as a strategic platform and the other ROI. Now, this other ROI is something that I created, and I call it risk of inaction or risk of inadequacy. It's the risk you take by not doing it correctly. Traditional ROI is, if we spend money to do it correctly, how much value do we get back out? That's traditional ROI, and it's a useful discussion if you have money to spend. But a lot of us don't. And what we're having to do is fight for every dollar we need for our programs. And I found in many customers, it's much more effective to talk about what you're going to risk if you don't do it correctly. If we allow that first project not to be done in SharePoint, and we let them do it in Dropbox or some open source application, what is the risk we're taking with that one project? And what is the increased risk we're taking when we start doing that in every other project, going to point solutions and having this chaotic portfolio of services that don't integrate with each other? What's the risk there? And I know that in many organizations, our bosses only care about the budget. They are measured by spending a certain amount and getting it done. They do not necessarily care if a year later the organization is feeling a lot of pain because they kind of cut some corners and took some shortcuts. So what this discussion often has to do is rise up in the organization to the level of, you know, management direction, general managers, boards of directors, because they are the ones whose butts are on the line if risk becomes reality. If something goes wrong and value plummets 2 years from now, they're the ones who care about that today. And so be aware of the possibility that as you try to align SharePoint with your business strategy, you may very well have to put ROI aside and start talking about risk. And you don't want to sell fear necessarily, but you do want to communicate reality. What is the real risk? What is the cost if that risk becomes a reality? And what is the likelihood of that risk becoming reality? And let a business leader, someone above you, make a decision about what that means. Oh, and as we go through this session, these slides with the orange centers and the light bulbs, those are your takeaway slides. Those are the things I want you to sit down with your team, whoever that might be, and make sure everyone agrees to, that everyone understands these points. And this will get us a strategic buy-in to SharePoint. Now, once the organization has committed to SharePoint, there's one more key piece, which is the politics. And this is one of the elements of the people side of governance. You need to make sure you've considered the politics in your organization. Companies will come to me and say, we need a governance template. Who should be on our governance board? And what should it look like? And the answer is, I can't tell you. Because it has to be based on the political realities of your organization. And so this step is about building the right team and getting the right buy-in to SharePoint from a strategic level. You have to look at who is impacted by SharePoint in your organization. And the bottom line is, it's everybody. Your business users, your developers, IT, security, finance, personnel, executive, legal, project management. Everyone is likely to be touched by SharePoint. Now, you don't necessarily need to get them all involved for the first project unless they're all going to be touched by the first project. If your first project is contract management, most of your business users probably won't care and they don't need to be involved. But you need to look at who's going to be involved in your SharePoint initiative and understand who is driving that initiative. Which of those groups is really pushing SharePoint and why? Now, in some organizations, it's the executive. The executive has gone to a Microsoft CIO summit, they've drank the Kool-Aid, and they're like, SharePoint's the greatest thing, I want my IT team to put out SharePoint and get it done. Whether that's right or wrong, it's helpful. In some organizations, it's finance. Finance is looking at the license costs of legacy platforms, and they're saying, we are spending how many millions of euros supporting these old platforms when SharePoint's part of our enterprise agreement with Microsoft? Reduce that cost. Sometimes it's finance. Sometimes it's legal, saying our file shares are putting us at risk. We need to improve that. We need to get some document management in place. Often, it's IT. IT sees SharePoint. We see the value in it. We see what it can do. And we're the ones championing it because we believe in its value. So identify the part of your organization that's driving SharePoint, why they say SharePoint is valuable, and then look at who else is going to be impacted if that moves forward. So every other group is going to be impacted by SharePoint. And what is the dynamic between those groups? Now, let me give you some examples of this. I have been in an organization where the CEO loved SharePoint. Huge executive buy-in. You would think that would be a very good thing. The CEO was telling the entire company, SharePoint's the greatest thing since sliced bread. We should use SharePoint. It's going to solve a lot of our problems. That's normally a good thing. The problem is, that was the CEO of a small company that bought a bigger company and fired half of its employees. So all of the users don't trust the CEO. They don't like the CEO. And so that CEO isn't necessarily the right one to be championing SharePoint. That's one example. Another example is with IT. If IT believes in SharePoint, IT may be correct, but does the organization trust IT? In many organizations, the user last saw IT in 2003 when we gave them their Windows XP desktop with Office 2003. And we told them we'd come back and give them a new laptop in 2007, but then the economy started to go down the tubes, and now it's 2012 and we're thinking about deploying Windows 7. They don't necessarily see IT as an innovator. They see IT as a help desk. And so they may not trust that IT really has the right solution. And in those situations, you simply need to align politically with other parts of the organization that can be the front man, that can be out there championing SharePoint. IT can align with finance, or align with legal, or align with the CEO, and let them do the talking if they're the ones that the rest of the organization trusts. I've seen a lot of very talented IT organizations that love SharePoint, are very passionate about it, but they need to take a step back and let someone else talk to the business users about the value and position it in the organization. And then as you look at your governance board and who's going to be involved with governance in whatever way you decide, it needs to be based on the political realities of your organization. In other words, human resources or personnel may need to be very tightly involved with governance. They may care about what users are going to post on the intranet and what privacy-related documents are being hosted. But I've been in some organizations where personnel didn't care. What they were doing with SharePoint really didn't impact them, and so personnel didn't need to be involved. And so simply evaluate the political realities of what you're trying to do and involve people at the correct level. Because if you require that personnel is at every governance meeting or every governance email, they simply will stop participating and because it will not be relevant to them. So that's the political side of it. And that rounds out our strategic elements, which are committing to governance, committing to SharePoint, and getting the right people talking about and talking to the rest of the organization about SharePoint. Now we've got SharePoint sort of pointed in the right direction. The next section is project related. It's about how we take a business need and turn it into a solution. And we're going to do this over and over and over. But we'll look at it with one example here. And in this section, we first need to identify what that business need is. We need to decide what's going to be valuable to the business. This is often a business analyst type of function, where we say, hey, the business has something. SharePoint can deliver it. Now, there is a middle step where IT governance has to look at a business need and say, yes, we want to take this on. It seems valuable. SharePoint seems to be the right solution. So there's some handoffs. But it's all about identifying business need. And in my experience, it's really about asking four very simple questions. What are we trying to achieve from a business level? Don't mention SharePoint. Don't mention technology at all. Just what are we trying to do as a business that defines your outcomes? Why does it matter? In other words, what's the value of this need? And that defines the business value. To whom does it matter? The politics. Sometimes a business need might have very low value, but it might matter to the executives. And so therefore, it gets a little bit more traction, right? And finally, very importantly, how do we know it worked? If we tackle this need, how will we measure it and know that we actually succeeded? You have to ask all four of those questions. And any one of those questions that gets missed will cause pain later down the road. Now you've identified the need. You've decided it's worth tackling. You need to start a project. And project management isn't new. There's all kinds of project management frameworks, like Microsoft Office framework and Six Sigma, or Microsoft Operations framework and Six Sigma and other things. All of the project management models boil down into very common elements that I call a discipline of D's. You define the problem, which is really taking that business need and really defining it. Now that you know it's valuable and that you're going to initiate a project, what are all of the outcomes, the business values, the politics, and the metrics associated with that one project? Then, once we've defined that, we can start designing a solution. Once we've designed a solution, we start developing it. Once we've developed it, we deploy it. And once we deploy it, we delegate it to operations. So all of the project management models basically boil down to these basic phases. And within the development phase, we have the option of building in iterations, of going through and validating requirements in small steps. You might think of that as Scrum or Agile or any number of other terms. So within the development phase, we have the development cycle, where we release a small bit of code and we refine the requirements. The users say, that isn't quite what I needed. I needed this. What I really meant was this. And that's OK. We then go back and revisit the design and make tweaks to the design, revise the solution, we refine the requirements, we revisit the design, we revise the solution, and then we repeat. And we just go through that over and over and over in that little internal development lifecycle. Now, again, none of this is new. This is basic project and development management. One of the things that's critical, though, in organizations that are less mature in these areas is that you have to help your teams understand the difference between the large project management lifecycle and the small development lifecycle. Those serve two very different purposes. And the challenge comes when an organization gets to this small cycle and the users see a little bit of code, and instead of just saying, oh, that's not quite what I meant, they say, oh, we should also do this. And they bring in what is an entirely new requirement, which really should be a new project. And that's where you get into the spin cycle. That's where you get into the laundry machine going around and around and around and around and never finishing. And I've seen some awful examples of that. I've been in several customers with more than 10,000 users on their SharePoint beta. In other words, they started with a prototype. It grew and grew and grew and grew and grew and grew, and more users got onto it. More than 10,000 users on beta infrastructure, hosting business critical processes and data now, that is at huge risk. You don't want to be in that boat. And it's all about helping the business understand the difference between refining existing requirements and introducing entirely new requirements. And there's a balancing act that has to be played, because sometimes a new requirement will come in that's so important that it's worth going around the big cycle one more time. But the business has to understand the risk of doing that, which is it's going to cost more money and it's going to take more time. Simple enough. It's an easy equation. So help your organizations understand the differences between those two cycles. Now, within that cycle, we have the design, the define and the design phases. We define our requirements, and then we have to design an architect a solution. And so this step, step six, architecting the solution, is the most specific SharePoint step. This is where we get technical from a SharePoint level about how things have to be done very differently than you would do it on a file share or Exchange or some other service. Architecting the solution means putting together the right physical and logical infrastructure to support the requirements. Now, what we're going to come out of with this is a definition of architecture. And I've seen some crazy architectures. And I'd like to ask you to think about some of these. I've been in a business where SharePoint, a big business, where SharePoint was running on a single server with SQL on the same box. I've been in a very big business where they had over 200 production farms. I've been in a very big business that had self-service site creation. Are these necessarily crazy architectures? No. In a book or an article, someone might say, oh, it's a best practice not to do this. But the reality is, if it meets your requirements, it is absolutely the right solution. The 200 farms was a foreign ministry, where the national foreign ministry had a farm in the national capital, and there were farms in every embassy and consulate around the world, because if there was a civil or natural disaster, those consulates and embassies had to be self-sufficient. They had to have certain data there. You have to have a farm in those locations in order to provide that level of service. The single server supporting both SharePoint and SQL was a small remote sales office of an, this was a mining organization. It was a small remote mine where, again, they had a small team that needed certain data available locally for both performance and data availability reasons. So crazy, there's no such thing as a crazy architecture. It's about designing an architecture that meets your requirements. And so in order to do that, you need to be able to really define your requirements and then design a technical specification. And I'm going to step you through a process that allows you to do this. Now, I think I can safely say this will be the part of the presentation that will be most valuable to you. I'm going to step you through this so you understand what this is. And again, this is the most SharePoint-specific piece of this discussion. Notice we're moving from define to design, from yellow to green, yellow on the left, green on the right. We're getting inputs in from the business, and we're spitting out a technical specification in this phase. After this, we go into the development phase, where we actually start building the solution. So, in this example, we're going to look at a business that already has SharePoint running. They deployed it for a simple intranet, simple My Sites, and they have a couple of team sites running. So SharePoint's already up and running, which is often the case, and we get a new set of requirements. And in our case, the personnel department comes to us and says, we need to collaborate more effectively on recruiting activities. We need to be able to receive CVs or resumes. We need to be able to process those, set up interviews, and just be better in the way we deal with that. Oh, and by the way, last year we all got iPads, and we want to be able to do a lot of this on our iPads. So we get these inputs in from the business. We need to categorize those inputs into boxes, into categories. The first are business outcomes. By the way, notice the word requirements doesn't show up anywhere here. Requirements sounds like it can't be discussed. There's no such thing as a requirement in SharePoint because there's always conflicting requirements, so they are always up for discussion. There are desired outcomes. What are we trying to achieve? That's the most important thing that really drives everything else. Then there's functional preferences. We would really like the page to be this color and the button to be round and to have a menu that looks like this. Then there are technical considerations. We have iPads, and we want to be able to take CVs onto our iPads securely. Well, securely comes later. We want to be able to take CVs onto our iPads to work with them offline. And then there are the very important project constraints: money, time, people, and talent. So we've got these constraints that come in, and we need to architect a solution within those constraints. We then go into a phase of what I'd call defining the real requirements. The first step is classifying information, asking what types of information are we working with in this solution. For example, in this solution, we are working with CVs. We're working with resumes. What is a resume? Well, it's a Word document, maybe a PDF. We want to be able to describe it with certain metadata. Who sent it in, what job they were applying for, when they sent it in, did we hire them or not? And we start describing content, which is what information architecture is all about. We also look at the fact that we're going to be dealing with interview appointments in this solution. We might be looking at tasks in this solution. So what types of information are we working with? We start building out our information architecture. And to me, information architecture should be very pure in the way it's defined, which is about describing content. It's about making sure that we can identify content effectively. Things like metadata and content types are the technical specifications that we end up outputting. And we want to ensure that we've described content so that later it is easier to find. So we're dealing with things like the site map. Where in our site map do we want this recruiting thing to be? Probably somewhere in HR. Things like search optimization. What can we do to improve search? Maybe set up some search properties. All of that is true information architecture. And good information architecture will facilitate information management, but it is different than information management, as we will see. So this is information architecture. We've done this phase, and we now have technical specifications for a couple of key elements in our solution. Then we take that information classification, and we compare the types of information we're dealing with to our information management standards. So for example, we're working with CVs. We may have a standard that says because a CV has personal information in it, it must be very secure, only HR can have access to it, and it has to be retained for 7 years. So that comes from our information management standards, the same standards that told us that about our file shares and about resumes that are sent in email. And of course, we all have very detailed information management standards, right? Yeah. Most of the companies I go to, they're like, yeah, we sort of define a couple of record types, and that's kind of it. The unfortunate reality is we should have had information management standards the very first day we took information in paper in 1850, but we haven't. SharePoint is now forcing us to create standards because the alternative is going to be a lot of pain later. Do you really want your SharePoint in 3 years to look like your file shares do today? No. Your lawyers sure don't either. So you need to have standards. What happens if you don't have standards? Well, you have to go ask the business customer. It's not up to IT to necessarily make things up. The business customer has to get involved. Now, the business customer in this case might be HR, but they also may have no clue what the standard should be. So you may go to legal, and legal may have an idea. Sometimes finance may have an idea. Sometimes a security officer or a risk management organization will know. So if you can get the input, then you can define the standard for this project, and you now know the policies that will drive this project. We are going to keep resumes for 7 years, and we're going to make sure they're very secure. If no one can give you the input, if no one can give you an answer, nobody can make a decision, which is a reality in many organizations, then make up a standard. Make one up. Say, okay, we're going to keep resumes for 5 years. As long as no one can give you an answer, you can define it, communicate it back to the business customer, and say, this is what we're going to do, and let them sign off on it. But you have to have that standard. You have to know what it was for later in the story. And so this is something you can't miss. You can't skip that step, even if you have to make it up. And I've been in a lot of very big companies that right now with SharePoint are setting a default that any content type will be retained for only 3 years and then deleted, unless it is another content type that has a longer retention policy or a shorter retention policy. But they're just setting a default. And I've actually been in a couple of IT organizations where the way they're doing this is they're telling the business users, oh, that's how Microsoft wrote SharePoint. They're just making it the default and forcing the business user to say, if it is more important, you tell me why and you tell me how long it should be kept. So there's different ways of addressing this, but in the end, you have to have some kind of standard that defines the policy that you're going to manage to. Now, so information management policies fall into a couple of categories: security, compliance, and the entire life cycle of content. How is content added to the environment? How is it stored? How is it presented and delivered to different users? How is it preserved over time? In other words, locked like a record. And how is it deleted? So those various phases of information management can be, you can learn more about those at a white paper. I have the link on the slide. And again, you can get all these slides from TechNet, from the event. Do take a look at those, because those are the kinds of policies you need to be thinking about. The next step in this process is to define your service management policies. Now, service management are things like uptime. How important is this to the business? Well, in the case of recruiting, it's important, but it's not that big of a deal. We might go for 95% uptime, which is, you know, enough for us to do patching on weekends and reboot servers now and then without too much stress. Isn't it nice that that's what we built our original intranet and team sites to support, is 95% uptime. So that's good. This will fit within our existing farm. Data protection or integrity. How do we ensure that if a user corrupts a CV that we can recover that one piece of information? So there's content recovery and platform recovery there. Business continuity. What happens if our farm does go down or if an entire site gets destroyed? So things like disaster recovery have to be addressed. Performance. What is the user expecting from a performance perspective? This becomes very salient in examples where users are in a remote corner of the world and they're trying to pull down the CVs from our data center here in the Netherlands, and it's really slow as they open up those resumes. Is that acceptable? What's the performance expectation? And storage. What's the impact on storage? Storage is part of the service definition. We have to then calculate, if we're going to store CVs for 7 years, which is our information management policy, how many resumes are we expecting to receive? We have to model that so that we can define our service management policy. That is, this year, this solution is going to need X gigabytes of content. And next year, it's going to need X terabytes of content. And after that, it's going to scale. We need to be able to set the roadmap for our storage. And last but not least, interoperability. One of our technical considerations was that the HR organization wants to use iPads. Does our existing service support iPads in a way that is secure? Maybe not. Maybe we need to go buy a third-party tool, and there are some good ones, like there are some good ones out there on the expo floor, that can make sure that anything that's taken offline onto an iPad is only accessible to certain users and is secured as encrypted on those iPads. So we may need to add we may have a policy here that says we're going to make things available to iPads only if we can ensure it's encrypted. And so we might need to be adding some components into our service when we start architecting the service itself. So we now move into taking these policies and saying, okay, the existing farm can support this. The uptime is okay. But we're going to need to add a third-party tool to support iPad encryption. We're going to need to add some storage capacity to our underlying database infrastructure. We can architect the service layer. And on top of that, we can architect the information management layer, things like sites and lists and libraries and permissions and policies that meet our policies. And all of these things are related. I only have a few arrows here, but all of these things are a discussion about how we translate the business need into an actual specification. For example, our information management policy says CVs have to be retained for 7 years. That should inform our information management architecture. We should probably have a content type for CVs that has a retention policy associated with it. And in SharePoint, content types have both an information architecture and an information management component. They have retention policies. They have information rights management policies. Those are really part of this box that just happened to be part of the content type that also does description of content. We build out our information management architecture. And last but not least, we are able to start defining what our environment's going to look like. So in our existing infrastructure, this is what our enterprise looks like. We've now identified that we can support this solution by simply putting it within our existing farm, maybe in its own site collection with a content database that we can allow to scale appropriately on appropriate storage platforms. And we've now extended our service to support this new requirement. So this is the process. hopefully this starts to make sense here, and you can take this and use it and twist it and figure out how to communicate this to your organization. But this is a good, successful system. As you communicate about this to your organization, there are a couple of things I want you to help them understand. The first is, I skipped that step. After we built all that, we can start building the solution. We can start building the pages and the function. This is a process. You can successfully take business needs in and decide how it's going to look on SharePoint. It's not a mystery. It's not magic. It's not voodoo. There is a process. You just have to commit to it and be disciplined about it. Second, you're going to have specifications. You're going to have specifications that come in from the business. Those are the yellow. Those are the solicited specifications. And then you're going to define policies and architecture. Those are the derived specifications. And people need to understand the difference between the two. And what I mean by that is a business customer should not come to IT and say, I need this many sites with this many lists and this many content types. Because that is a architecture. That is a decision that must be made based on solicited requirements. So they should understand that derived requirements are not something you start with. They're something you finish with. Now, that said, there are certainly lots of smart users out there. They may be exactly right about what they need. And that's good. You have to ask them why. Why do you need this many sites and content types and lists and libraries? Because that pushes them back to this layer to define what it is that they really are trying to do. And you can document that and capture those requirements because those will be critical to you later in the game. You have to be able to track your decisions back to the original input, the yellow, to who drove it, why it matters, and how it's going to be measured to know it's been successful. So people can come to you with green requirements or red policies, but they always have to be able to drive back to one of those valid inputs. And probably most importantly, this entire thing is a system. You cannot change one thing without making compromises in another box. You cannot have a project that you're in this middle of this process and you maybe have defined the architecture and then the budget gets cut. That's not acceptable because it's a system. Something has to balance. The architecture will have to change, which means a certain policy will not be able to be valid, which means a requirement cannot be met. And that's the discussion that this generates. Because each, in a large organization particularly, each of these boxes is owned by a different team. The business customer wants everything today for free. Legal wants to cover their butts and do everything absolutely correctly. Project management wants to ensure it happens on time and in budget. IT is trying to juggle all these players around. And you have to create a discussion that allows one team to understand that their requirements cannot be met 100% unless something else gives in the system. So help people understand where they play in this so that they can work with each other. And the more you can get the team bought into this sort of approach, the more effective it becomes over time. Now, in this middle section here of taking your policies and deriving your architecture, this is where SharePoint experience is really critical. You have to know how certain policies are implemented in SharePoint. If you're newer to SharePoint, this is going to be tough. It's going to be difficult. And I honestly recommend, where possible, to get talent in to help you with this piece, whether it's a consultant or something. Get some knowledge that will help you. But don't just ask someone to do it for you. Ask them to tell you why they did it so that you can learn. And the next time you go through it, you can do it yourself. But let me give you some examples of how you end up with architectures in SharePoint. Now, this slide says it's a best practice architecture, but there's no such thing as a best practice architecture. It's all based on requirements, for sure. However, what this slide does communicate is what I see in the Fortune 100 organizations who've become more mature in SharePoint and have been forced into this architecture based on real requirements. So I'm going to give you some stories. We'll see how this is built, and it will help you understand why architecting SharePoint solutions is difficult, and lots of compromises have to be made. And that's why you need the system we just discussed. So let's start with what we have. We have our intranet, our My Sites. We just added recruiting. Now we get a new requirement into the system, a new business need. We want to collaborate with customers, extranet. We go through that whole process of yellow to green boxes, and one of our policies is that external users should not have access to internal data. And depending on other requirements, we might decide that the best way to support that is to actually have a separate farm for our extranet, because then we can have an absolute service and data isolation. And then we actually think, oh, if we're going to have a separate farm, maybe we should put that out in Office 365, which is, by the way, a very good place for extranets for a lot of organizations right now. And that's actually pretty cheap, too. And so we look at perhaps having an external, a separate farm, maybe even a cloud-based farm for our extranet. Then we get another requirement in, which is for, then we are monitoring our environment, and we start realizing that it's become more and more difficult to patch and update our environment. I've been in a lot of companies where they haven't even applied Service Pack 1 to SharePoint, which is this week a year old. And the reason they tell me, we don't know what's going to break. Something bad might happen. Well, OK, that's a real concern. If your environment has become so complex that you cannot patch things, what happens when there's a patch that is security critical? That if you don't implement the patch, you are putting your data at risk. After a year, some of those patches are that severe. You'd have to keep things updated. So one of the things that larger organizations are starting to do is starting to create dirty and clean environments, where they can put business critical data in a clean environment. They can keep it patched more effectively. And one of the core scenarios I see happening in larger organizations is creating a service farm, a SharePoint farm that is running the services, search, profiles, BCS, and metadata. And that is a very clean farm. You need very few third-party solutions to support it. You need no, sort of freaky customized solutions generally. So you've got this nice clean farm. If there's a search patch, you can apply it very, very easily. When the next version of SharePoint comes up, you're going to be able to upgrade this farm very easily without having to worry about backward compatibility of some third-party web part in your team site. And so this architecture is starting to become a little bit more popular right now. And keep in mind that thanks to SharePoint 2010, these services can be published to every other farm. So it's still a centralized, centrally managed service. It's still part of your SharePoint infrastructure. It just happens to be another technical container. Then we get to a new requirement, which is a line of business application. Here at the SharePoint tracks of TechEd, we're talking a lot about project this year. And I get a lot of questions about project. Where should we put project? Well, this is a good example of if our project management organization comes to us and we go through the requirements, we might decide that project should actually be in a separate farm. There's a couple of reasons for that. One is updates. Again, project can have its own updates schedule. We can ensure that those things work well. A second is cost. Now, you may think that having a separate farm is going to be more expensive, but my experience has been in more mature project situations that they start using third-party tools to enhance the functionality of Project Server. For example, they get Nintex Project Workflows. Great solution. That is licensed per user in the farm. So if you put project in your main farm, you're now paying for 80,000 seats instead of for the 500 users who really need it. And so that actually becomes cheaper and easier to put into a separate farm. So the cost discussion is a little bit more interesting than you might think. Another example is CRM, or enterprise resource planning, or business intelligence. Putting those things in their own farm allow you clean updates, allow you to delegate administration in some more interesting ways. With BI, for example, you can start allowing users to do things at the farm level, creating connections and publishing those connections that you would never let them do in a more complex farm. So line of business applications are great to have in their own farms, and the final benefit you get there is chargeback. Why should IT bear the entire cost of Project Server when it's supporting the project organization? Let them pay for it. And it's a lot easier to tell them what they need to pay when it's its own technical container. If CRM is in its own container, sales can pay for it. If BI is in its own container, finance and marketing can pay for it. So it gives you a really nice way of charging back. Then we get to finance. And finance comes to us and says, we now have a new workload related to the financial performance of our organization. It cannot go down. It's business critical. And I have a lot of organizations come to me and say, we've got this new workload. It's business critical. It can't go down. Can we do it in our existing farm? Now, what you have to do is you have to look at your existing farm and say, what was it built to do? This farm was built for 95% uptime. That may not be sufficient in and of itself. This farm may have lots of third-party pieces that have the potential to break. They're full trust code things that we've deployed. And so in order to truly guarantee that we can meet that requirement of the business customer, we might need to put business critical information in a separate container, whether it's a site collection, a web app, content database, or even a separate farm. And again, in more mature SharePoint organizations, I'm seeing this a lot, where they're starting to peel off collaboration based on business needs, and usually rolls down to criticality. So a business-critical farm now can have a higher level of uptime, it might be on different clusters, and it might have site-level disaster recovery built into it in ways that a single farm, single huge farm, would be too costly to do. That's that example. And last but not least, apps. All of us have apps in our environment. And when I say apps, I mean things like submitting an expense report, requesting time to go on holiday, any sort of typical business process that we've got. We all have those kinds of things. I highly recommend putting those at least in their own web application, if not in their own farm. And that's for a couple of reasons, one of which is patching, one of which is portability for developers. If you put your apps scattered among all of your team sites, how are you going to replicate that to development and test? You're going to have terabytes of content associated with those solutions that you're going to have to move out into a separate environment. Whereas if you put those apps, which generally deal with very discrete data, in their own container, you now can take this content database, this web app, or this farm, and replicate it for developers much more easily. And then you get the new version of SharePoint. When SharePoint 15 comes out, and you're having to evaluate backward compatibility, it's those customizations that cause pain. We all experienced that from 2007 to 2010. By putting the heavy customization in its own container, that allows us, first of all, to upgrade these areas quickly to the next version of SharePoint because they're cleaner. And secondly, the apps don't need to be upgraded necessarily. They're already doing what we designed them to do. They're meeting business requirements. It's not like there's some rocket science new thing that SharePoint 15 does that we need all of a sudden for those types of scenarios. So again, this is a combination of stories that and architectures that I see trending in more mature organizations. So as a best practice architecture, yes, maybe, but it has to be based on your requirements. And if you look at this architecture, you can imagine that it's not the cheapest architecture in the world. You have licensing, you have support, you have infrastructure, and that's why we need this system. To truly meet every requirement that is coming from the business that they think is a requirement and cannot be discussed, you're going to have a very difficult and expensive architecture. So you have to be able to push the real decision back to the business customer and say, do we pay or do we take a shortcut? And if we take a shortcut, what is the risk we are assuming by doing that? And as long as that discussion is had and someone makes a decision and it needs to be the business customer, or IT makes the decision and tells the business customer, this is the way it is because you haven't made a decision, you've checked that box. So that's the architecture piece. Now, what I've just sort of done in the last 5 minutes is a 75-minute presentation of its own. I highly recommend that you grab the video, and the link is on the slide. It's from a session I did at Tech Days in Brussels a couple of months ago. Grab that, show it to your technical team, help them understand some of the architectural considerations, and that'll be a good start for that discussion. Whew. That's a lot to think about. There's a lot of people that have to be involved, and you have to say, who is going to be involved with each of these pieces of the project lifecycle, of the development lifecycle, of the definition of requirements and architectures? And there's basically a couple of skill sets that are necessary. Someone has to be able to define the requirements. That is the business analyst who asks the question, what are we trying to achieve? Who is it important to? Why is it important? And how will we measure it? And doesn't even mention SharePoint or any other technology. Just elicits requirements. Then there's someone who determines the solution, who goes through that process from yellow to green of deciding what the solution's actually going to look like. There's someone who builds the solution, the developer, sometimes the power user, who actually builds the solution, IT deploys it, and a project manager makes sure that it comes in on time and under budget. All of these skill sets are really important. In smaller organizations, you might be the one person having to do all these things, and I definitely feel for you. It's not easy. In larger organizations, you've got lots of teams fighting their own piece of turf. I'd feel for you. It's not easy. My experience has been the weak spots are not IT or development. They are project management and business analysis and SharePoint architecture. And again, those are the things where you can bring in talent, consultants, whatever the case may be, and make sure you're getting knowledge transfer. Because after you go through this process a couple of times, these lines will blur. Your business analyst will eventually become aware enough of SharePoint and how it works that when they will be able to ask more intelligent questions as they elicit requirements that will actually drive more smoothly to an architecture. And your organization will get smarter as it goes through the process. So that's the project management section. We now have something developed. We're ready to push it out into our environment. We need to manage the change. And when it comes time to deploy solutions, there is a technical component and a user component. Let's start with the technical component. You have to get things from your development and test environments into staging and production. Hopefully you have a test environment. I've had people come to me at events and say, Dan, we don't have a test environment. And many of you know what my answer is. It's, no, you don't have a production environment. That's a good example of talking about risk. And I literally had someone, I was at an event a couple of months ago, and I had someone email me 1 week after the event and said, Dan, I just got my budget for my test environment. I'd used exactly your words. Sometimes communicating about risk makes a difference. But you need to have at least two ends of this spectrum, hopefully some in the middle. And you've got to be able to get the technical bits from one to the other. You've got to get the application, however you define that, from development to test to staging to production. You need to get customizations, things like branding, look and feel, and content, the actual content, from one place to another. And it's relatively easy to take a fresh new solution and just move it into production. After that, it becomes a lot harder because you're going to have revisions to think about. At what point do revisions need to be made in an earlier environment and rolled into production? At what point does something need to be taken out of production and moved back in order to revise? That's where it gets super tricky. Things like a workflow. If you've got a business workflow, what is the rule that says what a user can change on the workflow in production directly versus what they have to go and test first? Those are tough. They're tough from a business process perspective, and they're tough technically. Because SharePoint out of the box really only supports deploying WSP packages one direction and updating them one direction. It doesn't let you roll them back if you made a mistake. There's no workflows or technical bits to help you do it. And there's not really much to help you with changes to content types, columns, content, unless you open a Visual Studio. And so this is a place where there are several third-party tools that will really facilitate this. And in complex application lifecycle management environments, my experience is you've got to have a third-party tool to help. So look at them. The second piece of change management is the user focus. And I like to think about user focus at the beginning of SharePoint, which is the initial adoption, and then how you make little changes after that. At the beginning, you need to make sure you're selling SharePoint effectively. It needs to be delivering big wins to whomever is getting SharePoint. If you're doing team sites, that's everyone. If you're doing one specific project, it's that team. Deliver the big, easy wins. Now, in my experience with team sites, that can be things like calendaring, group calendars, group tasks, where after a meeting, the manager puts some tasks in Outlook, and they magically appear in everyone else's Outlook through SharePoint. So there's some things that SharePoint can do really easily out of the box that users will go, oh, we've been waiting for this. Make sure you give them that, and they'll like it. If you're doing something for the business that users don't care about, solve some of their pain also. So what I mean by that is, let's say finance is driving SharePoint for you because you're spending too much on legacy platforms. So you're having to get rid of, let's say, Documentum or FileNet or whatever, and that's the driver for SharePoint. Will users like the fact that you're getting rid of the system they've used for 10 years just to save money? Absolutely not. So you better solve some user perceived pain and sell it that way. Don't even talk about why you're doing it for the business. Sell it because it's giving them something. You have to do it that way. And branding matters. SharePoint, and I'm not necessarily talking about look and feel, although that helps. I'm more talking about how you talk about SharePoint. The most successful projects I've seen have always at least thought about, if we're deploying an intranet, let's call it The Wire. Let's not call it SharePoint. Because we're a power company, and The Wire sounds cool. And let's call our My Sites Volt, just for the heck of it. Give it a brand. Give it a personality. Because that creates a relationship between the user and the technology that is very helpful in adoption. I have a Windows phone. I love my voice-to-text feature. It's an incredibly good feature. I don't love it as much as my friends love Siri. Because Siri has a name, a personality, she talks back to you, you can flirt with her. You have a personal relationship with Siri. I don't think it's as good of a technology as mine, But that branding matters. The relationship matters. Then, as you roll out each piece of SharePoint, embed the user in every phase. Users have a role in every single phase on this diagram. Sometimes it's a bigger role, sometimes it's a smaller role. And one of the roles is in this development lifecycle, validating that you're hitting requirements. And in this development lifecycle, you should be validating your training and communications as well. With your proof of concept users, with your beta users, with your test users, whatever you want to call them, they're the ones who should be receiving the training and the messaging and saying, yes, this sells it to me effectively. Yes, this tells me what I need to know. So that when you get to deploy, there should be no question that it will be successful. Deploy is not the time to figure out whether it will be successful. This is the time to figure out whether it's going to be successful. So test it all during the development lifecycle. And while I've been a trainer my entire life, I honestly believe you should not train users to use SharePoint. Instead, you should train them why. Evangelize why it's helpful to them. What does it do for them? What's in it for them? And train them how to achieve the requirements of the solution. That is very different than teaching them how to use SharePoint. What are you really doing this for? What were the inbound requirements? Train them to do those things. And only those things. Keep the message simple. And then give them a way of finding out what else SharePoint can do. That's sort of the on-demand training bit. Give them documentation, video clips, whatever it is, where they can go to a library and find out what else is possible. This is easy when you're doing a very targeted project. If you're doing something like team sites, people tend to want to train users how to do everything. Don't. They won't remember it. Pick the things that are most important. Why are you doing team sites? You want to reduce storage, okay? So teach them how to use versioning. You want to reduce conflicts. Teach them how to do check-in, check-out. You certainly want to manage security. Teach them that. That's all. Don't teach them how to create workflows or add columns to lists, because they might. If that's not why you're really doing team sites, wait. Let it get out there. Come back and do it later. Your solution is now out there. You have to manage operations. And with operations, there's a couple of points here. The first is you need to document what your procedures are. What are the inputs that you get from the business? We want a team site. What are the outputs? You've made a team site. What are the processes that you do between that, whether it's with a script, with a tool, or with the user interface? Document those operational elements of your operations. Measure them. What SLAs are you actually achieving? What are the costs of your operations? And based on that information, automate. Spend a little bit of time automating the most expensive and time-consuming tasks with PowerShell, with third-party tools. And that is definitely a place where both ROIs can be at play. By automating procedures, you can reduce cost. You can actually get real ROI. And by automating procedures, you get consistency. And consistency is the key to security, which is the key to reducing risk. So whether it's risk or reward, you've got both of them in management, operations management. So this is just the same thing as a takeaway slide. Oh, and I've got a great little presentation, again, a video for you guys that will give you some ideas of how you can automate SharePoint operations with out-of-box tools. So it gives you an example of how to provision team sites completely automated, where a user goes to a SharePoint list and says, I want a team site, and then a minute later, a team site is created for them. And that video will have all the details on that. Now you've got solutions. And the challenge comes as you add more and more things into your environment. It has the potential to become the wild, wild west. You can't let it become that. You have to manage your portfolio. You have to create a catalog of what you've built. In other words, you have to go back to this process, and you have to say, these were the inbound requirements, these were the policies we decided, here's the architecture we created, and you've got to have a catalog of that so that you can monitor it over time and look at the current state and ask yourself, does our current state match what we expected to build? Because one of two things is going to happen. You're either going to be able to validate that you were successful, which is a good thing, or you're going to find out that you aren't successful and you can go figure out why. Or you'll find out that you were over-successful, which I'm seeing in a lot of organizations. We built SharePoint to support a couple of teams and 200 gigabytes of data, and all of a sudden we have 3 terabytes of data and 8,000 users. That's actually pretty close to a real customer story right there. And they think it's SharePoint's fault that it's now slow. Didn't you watch along the way and see that when you hit 500 users, it might be time to add some servers and some storage? You've got to monitor, and you've got to be watching, and that should lead you to a trigger that says, we now have to revisit the design. So at that point, you've gotten the cycle of knowing what solutions have been deployed, what were the result, you know, what were the things that led us to those solutions, what's the current state, and are we at risk of missing the mark or actually being a victim of our own success. And at that point now, we have one more thing to do, which is to go back and do it all again. So we've been looking at these cycles. You'll notice in these cycles, there's a break between deploy and define. Let's close that break. We define, design, develop, deploy. We now push it out into the environment, and we manage it. We measure it and watch it over time. We evaluate it and modify the solution because we've realized the business has changed, the technology has changed, the usage has changed, and we are now back to the beginning again. And we go around and around and around and around committing to evolve, which is actually a strategic commitment. The business has to be committed to actually doing this. So in sum, governance, we have a definition from the internet. I mentioned the word deliver is a little bit problematic because governance defines both operations management, how we manage an existing service, and change management, how we introduce new services into the portfolio. So at the beginning of the session, I suggested governance defines how business needs are delivered and managed. I think it defines how a service is managed, existing, and how it is evolved to deliver the next business need. There's 12 elements here. We've actually now gone through this whole cycle, and you've seen some of the critical pieces that are necessary along the way. I'm sorry if you, there's no silver bullet. There's no magic potion to make this all happen. But while it is complex, it is not difficult. These are the checkboxes that you need to make sure you've touched, that you've documented along the way. It doesn't have to be heavy documentation. Governance is not a 100-page document before you start SharePoint. Governance is a commitment to evolve. And then as you go through each cycle, you're spinning out policies, you're spinning out procedures, and those become the governance document. And you learn how to introduce new things, and that becomes the change management. And it all is an evolutionary process that happens naturally as long as you're making sure you know what you know and know what you need to know along the way. So the engine starts to roll. We have strategic management for our business that is trying to maximize value and minimize cost. Strategic management sets a direction and says, this is where our business needs to go. One of those objectives we look at and say, SharePoint can do that. We implement project management, change management, and operations management to deliver that first project. And then the business says, oh, that was cool. We do it again. And we learn from our mistakes. We improve what we did before. We might have to go back and clean up a little bit and fix some things that we didn't do quite right because we didn't know what we were doing back then. But we move forward over time. And our architecture scales out, and we end up with a very agile organization that's delivering business value as opposed to being a bunch of plumbers and a cost center to our organization. That then wins the users. And they become increasingly bought into the idea that IT is about solving their pain. They become more involved in the whole process, and it gets easier and easier and easier along the way. And the one sort of final note I would make about this is if many of us are in environments where it's already too late, I honestly often recommend to customers to draw a line in the sand and say, we have no clue what this environment is. Set it aside, let it do what it's doing, and start fresh, doing it right. And over time, maybe we go grab some of those things from the chaotic environment and bring them into the clean environment. But sometimes that's what it takes, because you want to make sure you're delivering new business value first and not spending a lot of time and money cleaning up mistakes of the past. So hopefully those are some good thoughts for you. The rest of this event has tons of resources for you. The slide deck has them all. Obviously, you know to turn in evaluations online, and the internet is actually up today. At the end of the slide deck, there's a whole series of links to my books, articles, and presentations, and to our community at docav.com. This is my schedule for the rest of the day, so if you've got Q&A, please come down at noon to the AvPoint booth, and I'll be happy to chat with any of you guys. At 12:30, I'm doing a book signing at O'Reilly, and 2 o'clock at AvPoint's booths. Both of these organizations have some free copies of my books, and tomorrow I'll be at the SharePoint TLC all morning, so you can find me there as well. So thank you guys very much for sticking around. I appreciate your time. I know we ran a little long, so if you've got questions, you can also come up right now as I clean up. We can go down to the room together. Thank you very much, and have a great Tech Ed.